This is special coverage from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan. STS-135, the final mission of the U.S. space shuttle, is set to launch a few minutes from now. Atlantis is ready on the launch pad. There are no technical problems, and NASA says the weather is go. They're ready to launch. In a few minutes, solid fuel boosters and the big main engine will fire for the last time. NPR science correspondent Richard Harris is here in the studio, and Judith Smeltzer joins us now. She's a reporter for WMFE, our member station in Orlando. Today, she's in the bleachers at Cape Canaveral with her eyes on Atlantis. And Judith, we've been talking a little bit about the history of the program. Tell us about this mission. What's STS-135 expected to accomplish?
This mission is actually going to be a resupply mission, the final time that a space shuttle is going to be able to go up and take a big load of supplies to the International Space Station. Of course, as you were talking about earlier, the Russian Soyuz capsules will be going up to the space station after the shuttle goes away, but they're very small and they can't take the types of big loads that the shuttle can take. So that's exactly what NASA wants to do, take one more big load of supplies up to the space station, also take a big load down of things that they don't need anymore. And so that's really the big part. There's going to be a lot of unpacking and packing, and it's a lot to get done in not a very long amount of time. But NASA says even though it might be not the sexiest mission in the world, it's a very, very important one.
And Richard was describing it as a bus. Another description I've heard often is a space truck, and it's delivering general goods.
Well, that's absolutely right. I mean, it's delivering things that the space station is going to need to be able to survive for the next few years, and things that are big enough that the Soyuz can't get it up there. So that's what the shuttles have been good for. Of course, the shuttles also have been responsible for carrying up the parts of the space station itself over the years that the station has been being built. Huge, huge modules of the space station have gone up on the shuttle as well. And, you know, that's one of the things that they wanted to finish before they shut the program down, the shuttle program down, was to be sure and finish the International Space Station construction. They got that done on a recent mission, and now just one more load of supplies to go. Of course, this mission wasn't even supposed to fly. This was just going to be the rescue shuttle, and we can talk about that a little later if you want to. But NASA's glad it's going to be able to get one more load of supplies up to the station to sustain it.
Tell us a little bit about the crew for this mission.
Well, for one thing, it's a small crew. It's a smaller than usual crew. The most of the recent missions have had 6 or 7 crew members. Well, this one only has 4. The commander is Chris Ferguson, also the pilot Doug Hurley, Sandra Magnus, and Rex Walheim. They're all veteran space flyers. And the reason that the crew is so small is because, as I was saying before, Atlantis was originally supposed to be just a rescue shuttle that was going to be able to go up and help out if Endeavour needed any help and ran into any trouble in the last mission, but they decided to go ahead and fly it up as a regular mission. The problem is there's no rescue shuttle then for Atlantis for this mission, and the rescue, if there needed to be one, would have to be done by Soyuz. Only a very small number of people can fit on a Soyuz capsule, so they didn't want to send too many crew members up. That's part of the reason that there's only 4 people.
3.5 minutes to launch of the space shuttle Atlantis, and Judith Smeltzer, the end of this program is going to be the end of a big economic effect there in the state of Florida.
A huge economic effect. We're talking about close to 9,000 people just here in Kennedy Space Center, contractors who've worked on the space shuttle program for their entire careers, for decades, some of them, losing their jobs. And, you know, the local business leaders have been trying to drum up private industry, bring in new companies, but even still, in the 7 years since the announcement of the end of the shuttle program, less than about 1,600 new aerospace jobs have been brought into this area, which is known as the Space Coast. So a lot of people are having to go out of state to get other jobs, if they even can get other jobs. And there's a lot of concern about what that's going to mean for the local economy here. Obviously, also, people are very sad to leave this program. People say that the space shuttle program is like a family. Over and over, everyone we speak to says that, and they say it's like leaving their family members. They consider the shuttle a family member too. They feel very up close and personal with each one of them. They say each one is a little different, and so it's going to be a big hole that's going to be left here on the Space Coast when Atlantis lands and completes its final mission.
Just a few weeks ago, NASA made the decision along with Congress as to where the space shuttles will spend their future in museums around the country in various different places. Richard Harris, these are externally they look exactly the same as the missions that went up all those years ago, but these internally are quite different.
They are, absolutely. They've upgraded the electronics a lot. They've made many, many, many changes. One of the most significant may be the fact that they have sort of redesigned the entire external fuel tank, made it considerably lighter, which gave this shuttle capacity to carry a lot more material into orbit, because they can carry a lighter tank. They can they can put more stuff inside the shuttle. And so that was a huge advance when they did that. And of course, upgrades after each of the accidents as well. But it has evolved over the years with the technology.
Judith Smeltzer, can you tell us what you can see there from the bleachers at Cape Canaveral?
I can see a flood of press and photographers heading down to, there's a pond between the press site and the launch pad, and heading down to the edge of this pond and just hoping against hope that Atlantis is going to be able to launch. Really, people came here this morning not expecting to see a launch. There was only a 30% chance of go because of the weather, and now it looks like it's going to happen. 1 minute now left to go in the countdown, and people are getting very excited here. People are starting to think, wow, we may actually see a launch here today.
They could still scrub the mission even at this literally last minute, but that would have to be something unusual, you would think, Richard?
Yes, absolutely. It looks like they could, but it's highly unlikely.
Highly unlikely. As late as 6 seconds before the launch is scheduled, that's when they start to fire up the big main engine. Once you're there, you're committed to launch, but as Richard was explaining, there are any number of then alternatives should something happen, first landing back in Florida, then in Spain or south of France, or then back at Edwards Air Force Base. In the meantime, let's go now to Cape Canaveral, and this is the voice of George Diller, who'll be doing the countdown from there.
All right, C-Mac. Yes, C-Mac, the LTC says we need to verify using a camera, and we're positioning camera 62 right now.
Okay, let us know as soon as 62 is flown over.
The clock has stopped with 31 seconds left to go.
And 31 seconds is the time when the computers on board normally take over the launch sequence. So they've hit a glitch. They've got about 4.5 minutes to see if they can sort it out right now.
4.5 minutes because there's a launch window of about 10 minutes. This is to do with celestial mechanics and hooking up with the International Space Station. And, well, it's a 10-minute window. They wanted to launch right in the middle of that window, so that gives them about 5 minutes to figure this out.
That's right. So...
Any explanation that you've heard there, Wendy? Judith Smeltzer?
Yeah, we heard that there was some kind of a sequencer failure, but now we're not quite exactly sure what that is. So we're waiting to hear a little bit more from NASA. They're trying to figure out exactly what's going on with the technical situation.
Let's leave the feed up and see if we can glean any information from the conversation.
Very good. And TLS?
And they're now talking about proceeding, but they're doing a check down of everybody to make sure that everyone else is cool with this idea. So
I think the last thing we heard was, I think it can work. So we'll have to see whether
it can work.
All right, guidance.
And the voice that you're hearing with a little bit more...
Just a reminder for folks, our locked turn back hold time is 3 minutes and 16 seconds.
3 minutes and 16 seconds is left in the launch window. Is that what they're saying there, Richard?
I do believe that.
TLS on 212, we're ready to go. All right, very good. And launch director, with that cleanup, we're going to go ahead and proceed.
Yes, sir. Please do.
All right. And all personnel, we are going to pick up the clock here momentarily. And TLS, you can resume the clock on your mark.
I copy that. Countdown clock will resume on my mark. 3, 2,
okay,
one.
Go ahead.
Mark.
Go
for auto sequence start.
Hand off to Atlantis' computers has occurred. Solid rocket booster nozzle steering check and work.
20.
Firing chain is armed.
15.
Go for main engine start. T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1. Zero, and liftoff, the final liftoff of Atlantis. On the shoulders of the space shuttle, America will continue the dream.
Control ground, Houston.
Roger, roll, Atlantis.
Houston now controlling the flight of Atlantis. The space shuttle spreads its wings one final time for the start of a sentimental journey into history.
And that's the voice of Rob Navius there in Houston, who will be the commentator for the remainder of this flight as the Johnson Space Center takes over from Cape Canaveral. The booster has rolled over on its back in that, well, now familiar motion as it roars into space and burns through the cloud cover on its way. Let's go down to Judith Smeltzer. Can you tell us what you see there in Cape Canaveral?
She probably can't hear us, actually.
That's possible. That's possible.
Did you say something, Neil? Yes, no, I can't hear you at all.
Can you tell us what you see?
I hope you can hear the cheering around me as well. People here are very excited. It was a beautiful sight. It lifted off. There was the trail of fire underneath. We saw it for probably about, 30, 45 seconds before it disappeared into the clouds. Amazingly, despite the threat of bad weather, I think we could see it for longer than we could see Endeavour's launch on the previous mission when it was also a cloudy day. But the chances of launch were a lot better that day than they were this day. I tell you what, people here are very excited. No one expected this to happen today, and it's almost as though the heavens parted to let this final shuttle go off as planned.
Richard Harris, they're monitoring this flight through any number of sources, including TV cameras on the booster itself.
Absolutely, and it's already heading its way up the coast of North America. It will be. It's 24 miles downrange, according to Rob Navius here, so it's moving fast, and it'll just keep picking up speed. It's got about 2 minutes of those booster rockets to really get it going at a good clip, and then the booster rockets will fall away, and the three main engines will then carry it along for the next 6.5 minutes.
And there's the separation. The booster rockets are falling away from the space shuttle Atlantis, and they will plummet back to the Atlantic Ocean and be recovered. I suppose they will not be reused. There was a time when they were refilled and reused.
The booster rockets, absolutely. They were actually hoping to make many parts of the shuttle reusable, including the external fuel tank. But in the course of the design, they realized that it was actually didn't make sense that they would just drop that and let it burn up in the atmosphere. But they do. Yep, the booster rockets were the reusable component.
Judith Smeltzer, this is one last shot in the arm for the economy of the Space Coast, as hundreds of thousands of people are down there to observe this event.
The estimate was as high as 1 million people could have been here today, and NASA was even talking about if it had to cancel today, it might wait till Sunday to go and try again because of the traffic jams. I mean, my engineer getting here, who's sitting next to me right now, it took him 3 hours, starting at 5 o'clock in the morning, to get out here from Orlando. This is a bucket list item. People have basically realized, okay, we may have taken the shuttle for granted for the past 20, 30 years, but this is it. And if I ever want to see this thing go off, I have to come to Florida now. Yeah, all the hotels around this area have been booked. All the restaurants have gotten, like you said, a huge shot in the arm. And you know, that also brings up the other side of the coin. I talked about the 9,000 people who were going to be being laid off from jobs directly at the Space Center here, but there's a multiplier effect. You know, the economic development officials here estimate another 11,000 jobs could be lost in this area because of a ripple effect, a spillover from the loss of business and the dip in the economy. So while this is certainly a very exciting day and we don't want to do anything to take away from that, everybody here knows that there's got to be going to be some serious soul-searching and problems going on from now on.
Richard Harris, of course, the main impact will be felt there in Florida, but the space shuttle program was not just in Florida.
Absolutely. In fact, it was one of the secrets of its success was that politically they were able to spread it around. Mission Control is of course, in Houston or outside of Houston, and the components were built all over the country, and so Congress people from all over the country thought the space program was a wonderful thing, and it was one reason why it had so much legs. Even when the public sort of turned away from it as it became pretty routine, it still had very strong support on Capitol Hill.
And this has created any number of aerospace companies, not just NASA, but companies that contributed bits of this program to NASA, and well, they're going to try to stay in business doing other things.
Indeed. And in fact, the next step in human exploration will probably be some of these commercial programs taking off and either actually transporting people to the space station or even doing space tourism activities. So basically, over this period of time, the hope has been to hand this off and make it a profitable private enterprise.
And I wanted to go back to Judith Smeltzer. Is there any hope there amongst the people who may be losing their jobs that some other parts, private enterprise, may pick up where NASA left off?
Well, that is the hope here right now. I mean, there's companies like SpaceX that are bidding to do the commercial crew and cargo flights that NASA wants to do now. I mean, the idea is that NASA wants to help commercial companies take cargo up to the International Space Station starting here in the next 2 or 3 years, and eventually to take astronauts up there as well. That's going to be a lot farther into the future. But certainly, Kennedy Space Center is doing everything it can to try to position itself to take advantage of that and to make sure that, you know, if these commercial companies do these missions, that they still launch from Kennedy Space Center. I mean, remember, there are other spaceports now. There's spaceports in New Mexico and Virginia, and there's some competition here that Kennedy Space Center didn't used to have. So, but certainly a lot of these folks that are being laid off from the shuttle program are hoping to pick up work in the private sector. And, you know, one thing that a lot of people don't think about is that actually private aerospace firms and contractors are involved in the shuttle program. I mean, all those folks that are going to be losing their jobs, those 9,000 people, they're contract workers. They work for United Space Alliance, which is the main shuttle contractor with NASA. So it's not like the idea of private space is any big new thing here at NASA. It's just that they're not going to be supporting a government human spaceflight program, at least not right now.
And Richard Harris, we're talking, of course, about the American space program and going back all the way to the first launches back in the 1960s, and of course the landing on the moon and the successor, the space bus, as you described it, the shuttle program that's been so much a part of our lives, the fabric of our lives all these years. But there is, of course, we mentioned it, the Russian space program, Soyuz. There are French rockets that go into space, Ariane from South America.
Absolutely. And in fact, there's a Japanese cargo ship that takes cargo up to the International Space Station that has a strong Japanese component. There's also a European rocket that will take materials also up regularly to the space station. So, and the Russians will continue to bring people up there. So the space station itself will move along with these supports for right now. And as Judith mentioned, you know, maybe eventually some U.S. firms will get involved in ferrying stuff up as well. So, yeah, and let's not forget the Chinese, because the Chinese, as we sought space as a matter of national prestige, the Chinese are doing the same thing, and they have an aggressive manned space program. They're even talking about sending Chinese astronauts to the moon.
And we should not forget one aspect of this space program, the shuttle program, the International Space Station. This has helped, going back, I guess, to that first handshake in space between Soviet cosmonauts and American astronauts. This has been an aspect of international relations that should not be overlooked.
It absolutely has. The hope was that basically it would cement relationships. Sometimes it actually created some tension, particularly it did lead to some discussions as well about adequate resources and so on, but basically things have worked well. And I should note that what we've just heard on the NASA feed is that the engines have fired and done everything they were supposed to do, and they're dropping off the external tank momentarily. And so this mission is well on its way, and the launch appears to be a complete success.
Judith Smeltzer, thank you very much for your help down there in Cape Canaveral. We appreciate your time.
Thanks, Neil. Great to be with you today.
Judith Smeltzer, a reporter at member station WMFE in Orlando, joined us today from the bleachers in Cape Canaveral, where she watched the launch of the space shuttle Atlantis, which is now on its way to the International Space Station on the final mission for the U.S. Space Shuttle program. We'll follow it into orbit and talk about the future of NASA when we return. I'm Neil Conan. This is special coverage from NPR News.